This is Tabletop Babble, and I'm Amber. Hello! Today on the show, I chatted with Australian game designer and artist Sean Sunday. We sat down on August 27th to discuss Sean's D&D player screen. This screen helps new and neurodivergent players track mechanics of the game by keeping highly referenced information right in front of the players. Along the way, we discussed R.A. Salvatore's Forgotten Realms novels, social media management, and making tabletop games more inclusive through design. Hello, Sean, and welcome to Tabletop Babble. For my listeners, would you please introduce yourself, tell us your pronouns, and what you do in the space?
Yeah, hi, I'm Sean Sunday, also known as BrainBee Studios. My pronouns are he, him, and I do a bit of everything, to be honest. I'm an artist. I also write content for D&D, like some adventures, some monster stuff, and magic items and stuff like that. But I suppose the big thing that most people will know me by is the 5e player screen, which I designed in 2019 and just did a second round. I'm working on the final files to send off to the factory now.
Oh, so you had a Kickstarter for it, right?
Yeah, we did the Kickstarter this year, and we did an Indiegogo in late 2019 for it.
Well, we will get to that. But first, I kind of want to get into the little bit of everything.
Yeah, let's do it.
So first off, what was your introduction to TTRPGs?
Okay, so this is always a little bit of a funny story when I tell people this, but I have been steeped in D&D since I was 12, but I didn't know it and didn't start playing D&D until 2018.
Okay, I'm going to make an assumption. You were just surrounded by people who played it, and you just kind of were okay, that's the wrong assumption.
I read almost the entire bibliography of R.A. Salvatore.
I see.
Played Baldur's Gate, Icewind Dale, Neverwinter's Nights, all of that. Didn't realize that they were D&D games. Just like, oh, cool fantasy books. Cool fantasy video game. This is great. I love this story. Oh, hey, this one's got the characters from my books in it. Awesome. My little ADHD brain not putting two and two together.
So 2018 is when you said you actually played Dungeons and Dragons. So what was that like for you?
Well, it was really interesting because I've been playing HeroQuest since I was a kid. I still got my copy in the shelf behind me that I'm slowly painting the entire set of. And then from there, I started designing paper minis and turning them into 3D minis as well so that I could use them for HeroQuest and write custom minis. So D&D people started paying attention to those when I put them on Twitter, and I was like, okay, so if D&D people are starting to pay attention to my work, I should probably learn a little bit about D&D now. So I went and picked up the starter set and gave it a shot. And then when I realized that, oh, hey, 5e is Forgotten Realms. This is where all that shit that I've been reading came from. I know so much about this world already. I just need to learn the rules. This is great. Like, all of the cities and locations and stuff that were getting mentioned in the adventure when I picked up the starter set, I'm like, I know that place, I know that place, I know all about the people that live here. I haven't heard of this tiny little town here, but I know the Sword Coast. I know what these monsters are, I know how this behaves. I know what the Drow are like, I know what the Duergar are. Cool, this is awesome, I'm good to go.
Listeners of the show, again, if you listen sequentially, probably have heard already that I really don't have... I've played D&D for a long time, like I've played 3.5 for 7 years, but we did it in a homebrew setting. And I don't really know much about D&D lore. So for me, Sean, can you teach me a little bit? Like, if I wanted to know about lore, where should I start as far as book reading?
Look, it depends on which realm you want to get into. But if you want to get into the Forgotten Realms, which for me, a lot of people complain about 5e, most of the books being set in the Forgotten Realms in Faerun, but for me, who grew up reading about it and playing all those video games, I am so thrilled to get to play in that world. I don't care. Like, I am all for it, and then I'll just incorporate bits from the other books into it. So for me, Salvatore is the place to start. He is the one who has written the story of Drizzt and all of that stuff about Menza Baranzan. And really cool is actually currently working on retconning a lot of stuff to get rid of a lot of the problematic elements of the drow and things like that from the 80s. I've been seeing a lot of chatter on Twitter and his Facebook and stuff about things that he's trying to do in the new books that he's writing to improve on that, which is really cool. But I would read The Drizzt Legacy, and especially one of my favorites ever is the Cleric Quintet.
I'm making notes, everybody. Script, script, scrap. Cleric.
It's set in Candlekeep.
Okay.
And so that'll actually give you a really good feel for the different sects and monk, you know, different types of monks and stuff that reside in Candlekeep if you want to go and play Candlekeep Mysteries. And
which is a thing that's out. I've seen it. Oh my god, I feel so embarrassed. my D&D knowledge is so little right now.
That's all right. That's the one that just came out recently.
Yeah.
Just on a note of Salvatore, this one isn't set in the Forgotten Realms, but if you want to read another good trilogy, The Crimson Shadow by Salvatore is really cool. It's a very good fantasy book, and it definitely inspired a lot of my storytelling.
Is it more engaging in the world-building aspect or character aspect, or what is it about?
I would say the characters. The characters and just some of the interesting magic. Like, the main guy is called the Crimson Shadow because he's got this magic cape that'll make him invisible. But if he stays in one spot for too long, after he moves on, it leaves behind a crimson silhouette on the surface that he was standing against. And he becomes kind of a Robin Hood figure.
I am always interested in getting... I feel like in the last couple of years, I haven't gotten a chance really to read much, and I am trying to build up things for me to read that I would be excited about, and these sound awesome. So I will check those out. So going back to you getting into, you know, being excited about Forgotten Realms, realizing all this stuff about D&D, and you're putting stuff out. So what kind of stuff were you putting out that people were starting to take notice of? You had paper minis, you had 3D stuff that you were doing.
Well, the listeners won't be able to see it, but this guy is actually the first creature I designed, which is my logo for Brain Bee Studios, which is my take on the Intellect Devourer, and I call him Brian. And he's our mascot when we go to conventions and stuff like that. So that was the first paper mini I designed, and then the first 3D model that I paid an artist to convert into a printable mini. And so, I did a whole set of paper minis and started turning a few of those into 3D printable things. And those are all out on Thingiverse so that people could try them out and stuff like that. And then once we actually started playing the starter set, that was when we started struggling with, you know, the old ADHD object permanence and short-term memory and stuff like that, which was what ended up, you know, part and parcel. Me starting to play D&D immediately led to the creation of the player screen.
Speaking of that ADHD, I need to bubble into a topic.
Let's do it.
Because you spiked a thing in my head. I draw a bunch of little goblins, and I am interested in maybe getting them 3D printed or like made into 3D. So how did that work for you? Were you doing 2D art, and then you said you commissioned somebody to do it?
Yeah, because I am not a gifted 3D sculptor at all. So when I do my paper minis, I do front and back art. And then I looked around until I could find a 3D artist whose work was good enough that I was like, yeah, you'll be able to translate my art into a 3D printable. No worries. And since then, I've started working with a new artist, actually. So big shout out to the King's Table Miniatures and Sam. Sam just recently joined us all on Twitter at my urging because he was just on Facebook and Instagram before. I'm like, my dude. If you want to get lots of commissions in the TTRPG space, join me on Twitter. Get a Twitter presence and you will get so much attention. Your work is amazing. Let's do it. And he is the artist that sculpted my carnivorous ass deer for the Kickstarter. And I will be commissioning him for the rest of the set as soon as I can afford it.
What was his name again? Sam?
Sam at the King's Table Miniatures.
Okay, I wanted to say this. Sam, Shauna's right. I wanted to start doing freelance work, and I got on Twitter, and I started using it 4 years ago, and now I'm at the point where I'm like, huh, I could probably do freelance now if I wanted to.
Yep, yep. And I also, learned that the hard way. I spent so long on Facebook and Instagram and stuff at the start of my TTRPG career, and as soon as I actually got comfortable and figured out, you know, how Twitter works and all the rest of it, everything changed. Twitter can be a pain in the butt, but the opportunities that I have gotten, and just like, as just looking at the Kickstarter that I just ran, 47% of backers directly came from Twitter. The rest of them were scattered throughout every other platform, including Kickstarter itself. So the sole mover that did the most numbers was Twitter.
I want to talk to you about that, because as one content creator to another, I feel sometimes, like you said, Twitter can be Twitter, right? Where it's like, oh my God, I can't do it. I have kind of like two full question. I'll try to remember the second one, but the first one is, what do you do personally, if you're okay with sharing, to like help yourself with like that constant information, I need to put stuff out there, and also just information overload?
Okay, so I've got a little bit of a regime that I do regularly. One is, as much as I love everyone in the space, I can't follow everyone in the space. And sometimes I'll get a message from someone going, oh, did you unfollow me? I'm like, yes, I did. Not because I don't like you. I love what you're doing, and I still see it every day because everyone else in my feed shares it. But I'm not just a TTRPG guy, so I can't follow too many TTRPG people, because otherwise my feed is filled with nothing but D&D, and I miss out on all the other stuff for my other industries that I work in. So I very carefully curate who I'm following so that I can make sure I've got a healthy mix of everything, because I work in comics as well and board games. And so I need to see all of the above. So yeah, that's the first thing I do, is make sure that I'm not following too many people. I try to keep it under 500, to be honest, because even that, I'm still seeing more D&D than I am anything else. Next thing I do is, I've still got to go back and redo it, but whenever I start following new people, I go through my list, open them all up, every single one of them in a tab, and hit turn off retweets. Because
there you go. Yeah.
We all, especially those of us that are neurodivergent, retweet a hell of a lot of stuff. And not all of it is necessarily relatable to what I'm on Twitter for. So, and, you know, most of the time, the reason I'm following someone is for their content. And so if they are excited about something enough to quote tweet it, I'll still see it. But if they don't, I'll probably still see it eventually, because I'll eventually find the person who they're retweeting it from. And sure, I probably miss out on some stuff, but it keeps my feed trimmed. And then the third thing, and probably most important thing I do, is I go into my muted words. And anything that I'm not that interested in, or things that are straight up upsetting and, you know, damaging to my mental health and stuff like that, goes in the muted categories. Like, don't get me wrong, I love everyone involved, but I've muted the hell out of every version of Critical Role possible, because I don't watch the show. I have a lot of time for the creators, and I have a lot of time for the community surrounding it, but I don't watch the show. And before I did that, my show feed was almost non-stop Critical Role, and I wasn't seeing any of my comics content, I wasn't seeing any board game content, and I wasn't seeing any of the original content created by people I was following, because it was just all Critical Role all the time. So I had to mute it, or so I could just actually do what I was there to do. So don't be afraid to mute stuff. Even if you think it's really important to the community at large, if it's not part of what you are here to do, just mute it. Don't worry about it. You'll still see stuff about it. I still see stuff about Critical Role, but I see a healthy amount compared to all the other stuff that I need to see.
Sure. I was going to say, I definitely liberally use the mute. Even with people that I follow, like, I will tend to mute people just because like, if I really like you, I'll come back to your Twitter specifically to go find your stuff, even if I have you muted.
Exactly.
Because I do. I have mental notes. And I also been trying recently to use lists. So yes. That way I can see specifically, like, the artist. Because sometimes I just don't see art at all because algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
However, it... So it kind of leads into my next question, which, haha, I have remembered gold star for Amber today. If I'm going to get any... This is my one... Like, yes, today. It's been a long day, Sean. But anyway, the thing I've remembered is, coming from a content creator aspect, you know, trying to beat that algorithm, trying to make sure your stuff gets seen, what have you been doing yourself to kind of facilitate that?
Get a scheduler.
Aha.
I just started using a new one recently. And,
Ooh. Oh
my God, my engagement is still not exactly where I would like it to be, but sure. It has never been so good.
Ooh, tell me your secrets.
I'm actually getting all of the content up that I kept forgetting to post when I was trying to schedule everything manually and remember to post everything. Because like I said, I do things across multiple communities. And so I kept forgetting to advertise all the other stuff that I do when I was focusing on a single project. So I just started using a scheduler called Social Bee.
Social Bee?
Yes.
Okay. Like the insect?
Yep. Social Bee, just like the little, like, bee social, busy bee, etc.
All right, good.
What I love about it is you get different content categories. So you get, like, promotional, quotes, questions, and fun, curated RSS feed, and stuff like that. So you can go to any podcast that you like or blogs, grab their RSS feed, shove that into the curated RSS feed section, and it will automatically create a bunch of posts using every single episode of that podcast. And then you can just go through and go, I really loved this episode. They had this guest on, and I really like this thing that guest does. And then do that for every single episode, and you've got 50 posts. And it will automatically post them for you. You don't even have to manually schedule them. You can choose manually what day and time posts go out, but it's got an algorithm on itself where it observes the best practices for each platform, and depending on whether you set it to rarely, sometimes, often, or regularly, it will determine the best times and how many posts per day based off each platform.
Okay, so I'm gonna say Josh, my business partner, one of the co-owners of Geekspective, I'm gonna make you listen to this episode.
Yeah, it's amazing. And you can do a bulk import, and while you're doing it, if it's all the same sort of content and you're gonna be putting the same link and hashtags on it, you just go copy paste all the way down, scroll back up to the top, and then write something individual about every picture and every video, select what category that's going into. And then you can either import it as a draft or import it as approved. If it's approved, it goes straight into the queue, and then it will tick down the queue until it gets to the bottom and then start at the top again.
Okay.
So if you've got stuff that never changes, like, hey, we're Tabletop Babble and we do interviews with creators and you can reach us at this email so that you can ask us if you want to be on the show, you can just slap 10 of those amongst 40 different posts.
Uh-huh.
And it will just cycle through, go back to the top, cycle through, go back to the top. And you do that with all your evergreen content, stuff that never changes. Like if you've got a merch store, you can link to the merch store and just slap a handful of posts in there, and it will get posted regularly because that never changes. If it's something that is going to change at some point or is not going to be available anymore, you can set it to expire after this many posts. So after it's been posted 10 times, it won't get posted again. Or you can set it to expire on a specific date. So if you're having a sale for 2 weeks, you can set it to post and it will not post again after the date of the end of the sale. And you can just tailor your thing like that.
Okay, I need to start doing that because it's been a manual nightmare to remember to do things. Like, hey, guess what? Tabletop Babble exists.
Exactly. Exactly. I just finished yesterday writing the copy for all of my promotional posts. I've just uploaded like heaps of pictures of all my 3D printed minis, pictures of all my paper minis, pictures of my board games that are in development, the title cards for YouTube for my comic book talk show for every single episode, and just wrote the copy, put the links in and all of that sort of stuff. And now I've got an entire year's worth of content in there that I don't have to touch.
I feel like I've been trying to chisel marble stone with, like, a baguette. Like, that's what I've been doing. You just imagine me, the Twitter icon in marble, and me just slamming it with a baguette.
Yep, I know exactly what you mean, and that was me. Even when I started using Hootsuite, it was getting better for a while, and then they changed the amount of scheduled posts you can have on the free account to, like, 5.
Oh.
Oh, well, I need to find another solution. So I started looking at a bunch, and they were all really expensive. And then I found this thing, and it's like $20 a month.
Yeah, it's so, like, for anybody who's getting potentially listening to this and getting lost, like, I have about 1,900 followers. And so it's like, if all of them in a perfect world were not bots, and they're all there because they want to be there, they want to see my content, the chances of me making 2 tweets in a day and like a fraction of those people seeing it is, it's just so low. And like, I feel like the only way to get my stuff seen is literally blasting every hour on the hour because of just what we've been talking about, like retweets and just the feed is flooding. And if you're following 2,000 people, like the chances of you seeing what I'm doing. I have a enamel pin Kickstarter going on right now for goblins called Just a Brunch of Goblins. It's a bunch of goblins.
And they're so cute.
Eating breakfast. And I have a goblin artist who follows me who's a really big audience. And I kind of like sheepishly went into their DMs. We're mutuals, but I still sheepishly was like, hey, could you retweet this, please? If you're interested in it, please don't. You can say no. It's totally fine. And they're like, oh my gosh, if I had seen this, I would have done it already because this is adorable and I love it and I love your stuff. It's just that they never saw it. So, and I've been blasting at what I thought was too much, you know, and really I'm not.
Well, a big key thing you need to do, I found, is you need to have a mix of the promotional tweets and just for fun stuff. Since the first thing I did, before I started really populating my promotional section on this scheduler, I did the just for fun thing first. And I put a bunch of ask me anythings and TTRPG questions and comics questions and just photos of Robin and I and the adventures that we've had over the years and stuff like that. And it posts and, you know, memes related to comics, ADHD, games, etc. And it posts 2 to 4 of those a day. And since doing that, like the first one of those that it posted got like 85 retweets in a couple of hours. And I'd never gotten that many retweets on any random crap that I'd posted. And it's like, okay, this is interesting. And since then, it's just been making a big difference because you're giving people something fun to engage with. And they see that and go, oh, I do that. And click retweet. Yeah. And then that flags their algorithm with like, oh, this person likes your content. We'll bump your content a little bit higher up in their priority list and make sure they see more of it next time. And so when it does post a promotional thing, they're more likely to see it because they've engaged with your shit posts.
Ah, yeah, that's why I draw my little stressed out goblins. I try so hard every day to like draw something just for me. It's really just for me. Like, again, as a content creator, what I don't want to experience is burnt out, that I stop enjoying the things that I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I try very hard to draw a little goblin doing something every day. And that's kind of like my, you know, just for fun, you know, here it is. And hoping that it helps. So I'm glad to know that I'm kind of on the right path, except now I'm going to trade out the baguette for an actual chisel.
And I would advise with those, take all the ones that you've already drawn. As soon as you get a copy of Social Bee, slap them straight into your just for fun thing and just write a sentence about it. Like, oh, this little goblin is doing this, and that's the kind of day I've had. And just have those in there.
Yeah.
Mixed in with a bunch of other random stuff, and that'll be great, because then people will be seeing your artwork, but in a non-promotional way as well. just in a, this is fun and relatable. And that will push.
Yes, exactly. So going from the social media stuff, was it something that you implemented for your Kickstarter for the player screen and why you think that you got such a high transfer rate?
I did implement it 2 weeks in advance of the Kickstarter to get that boost going. But a big difference this time around, besides that, and making it easy for me to have Kickstarter content going out every damn day that the Kickstarter was running, it was the fact that this time I had like a 400% increase in followers. I had under 300 followers the first time we launched the Indiegogo. And we just managed to have some really amazing people share it and get behind it and think it was a really great idea the first time around. So we funded that, and then they delivered early 2020. And then I sold out of those by the end of last year. And that's when we're like, okay, so next year we'll do a Kickstarter this time. Because we went with Indiegogo because of the whole Kickstarter union thing that was going on.
I don't remember.
There was a big thing where Kickstarter was trying to stop some employees from unionizing, and then people started getting up in arms and going, we're going to boycott Kickstarter, but the union was like, no, please don't. That's going to get us fired. We want a union. We want to keep our job. So please don't. And that was 2 weeks before we were due to launch that happened. And we're like, oh no. Because people were getting angry at creators for being on Kickstarter and just a lot of, you know, Twitter being Twitter. And so we very quickly swapped to Indiegogo and we're like, fingers crossed, we'll see how this goes. And we did. We funded successfully. We didn't fund much over the goal, maybe a couple of $100s, but we did it and we got to make it. And so we sent them all out and people have found them really helpful, which is the best thing I could ask for. And that was with like 300 followers. And this time I had 2,000, which is a big difference. And I already had an engaged audience in the previous backers. So I emailed all of them when it went out going, here, look, 2.0 is coming soon. And then, you know, started sharing stuff well in advance of my Kickstarter as well, going, hey, this is coming, this is coming, this is coming. It's coming in July. Here's a preview. Sending out some samples and stuff like that and just making connections with people who would help, be able to help, who were influential and stuff like that. Also, big shout to Matthew Mercer. On the last couple of days of the Kickstarter, I tweeted at Matt to go, hey, you know, this is a long shot. I know you're really busy. You might not even see this tweet. But if you could signal boost this, you know, accessibility aid, that'd be great. And he did. And we jumped up almost $2,000 in a few hours.
So thank you, Matthew Mercer, so much. Yeah.
Big shout. We were so close to our second stretch goal then. And he hit that and bam, we jumped over it.
Nice.
He put us over that line and it was incredible.
Welcome to Eberron.
A land we fought so desperately for, now a land torn and scarred by war.
For our paths can never leave us, but we forge a new path.
Where opportunities are everywhere, yeah, for those with the guile to take them.
Where we find a new family while hunting down monsters.
This is the Morning Blues, a D&D 5e actual play game released every other Thursday on Beholder to No One. Join our DM Adam as he runs Virik, Jody, Rem, and Mika through their bounties and exploration.
Let's actually talk about what we've been kind of talking about for the last couple of minutes, which is the player screen. So first, can you just kind of give like the brief synopsis of what it is?
Yeah. So the player screen is like, think the DM screen, but way smaller. It's hyper, you know, streamlined and pinpointed to have just the information that players need at the table. Because, you know, like I said, we started playing with the starter kit and immediately started running into, oh God, I'm having a hard enough time as an ADHD DM remembering the stuff that I need to remember, let alone remembering the stuff that everybody else needs to remember and help them. I'm going to hit drive through and see if there's a screen for players out there. And all I kept finding was cheat sheets or things to glue on the outside of the DM screen. And a comment that I still keep getting from older school DMs is, I just put a cheat sheet on the outside of my DM screen for all my players and they can just read that. I don't want them having their own screens at the table. And it's like, well, that's almost good, but realistically, only the people sitting at your left and right are going to be able to read that. Because if you're sitting at the other end of a table, you're not going to be able to, especially if you have a neurodivergency, you're not going to be able to properly read something glued to the DM screen.
Well, Sean, as a DM, I provide all of my players at the end of the table opera glasses. No, there's no way. Like, that's kind of not good. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you can't read it properly from across the other end of the table, even if you weren't neurodivergent. But then if you've got concentration issues on top of that, and maybe a bit of dyslexia, that's not going to happen. And I couldn't find anything. So we tried the cheat sheets. But as yourself, you would know, if it's out of sight, it's out of mind. And we kept forgetting to use them because they were, like, on the table, out of our vision range. It wasn't, like, a standard part of the game and all that sort of thing. So, like, right, well, I'm just going to see if I can slap something together to help us. And I designed the thing, showed it to some friends, and are like, oh my God, why doesn't this exist already? I want it. Can you make this? Maybe. I know they've got a open gaming license thing. Let me look this up and see what I can do. And so I did a bit of research on that and found out what I could and couldn't include and was like, let's give it a shot.
And thus the player screen was born. Yes, I know exactly what you mean as far as out of sight, out of mind. If I don't have something bright and big in front of me, I tend to be drifting into space and thinking things and forget things are in folders or that I have access to things or I forget to ask for the shared sheet of basic moves or something. So yeah, I also have focus issues and I've written about, like, designing better character sheets even, because, like, when I came into 3.5, there was so much on that sheet that was so tiny that it really, every time I engaged with it, it really was frustrating. And I felt, unfortunately, like, you know, quote-unquote, an idiot, which is not the case. And I am there with you. So that's why I'm really excited to hear, like, do you have any background in kind of like designing for accessibility and usability, or is it something you picked up just because of your own?
Yeah, it's just something I picked up because of my own experiences and then going, I just did research with other neurodivergent people going, hey, if you wanted something like this, what does it need to be for you? And just started learning as much as I could from then about what our different limitations are, how things need to be designed to help us and stuff like that until I got to this. Yeah, and you know, obviously you would know as well, like when you have the neurodivergency, a certain amount of anxiety comes along with that as well. And a lot of us don't necessarily want to be pulling out a big bulky book and flipping through it in the middle of the game to try to remember what we can do. And so I was like, no, we need something here directly in our line of sight so that it's right there and we can see it and everything is organized by content type and alphabetized as much as possible.
Okay, so I need to know what is on the player screen. Like, what were the content brackets? All right, we got a screen being pulled out.
I'm going to, you know, talk about this, but I'm going to show you so you can see as well. And so the on your turn has, you know, at the start of the combat, ask things like, can I see them? Did I surprise them? How far away are they? What's, you know, that sort of thing. A little reminder, this is the version one. A little reminder about dark vision. I'm going to change that to just be the one sentence about, you know, do you have dark vision? To get people to check their sheets without so much of the description, because I'm replacing that with a micro table just saying, you can do this many things in your turn. Because I've got the description of all the different things you can do in your turn there and what they are. But I'm going to be adding just a, you can do one action, one bonus action, one interaction, move, and pick up an object sort of thing. Just a little guide of how many of those things you can do in your turn. Because a lot of people don't know that a bonus action and an action are different, and an interaction and a bonus action are different. And so you can do each of those things in your turn. Then we've got the dice diagram, so that people with, you know, dyslexia or just, again, the object permanence and concentration issues can, don't have to try to memorize each dice so that when they hear a verbal thing about it, they know exactly what it is. They can just look at the diagram and go, oh, right, it's that one, grab it. And yeah, then it's got a little description of, you know, what an attack is, what dodge is, what help is. And of course, the try to do anything. You know, it's a game, get creative, and it works at the DM's description. But most importantly, remember to have fun. And then the middle covers more miscellaneous but important information, like death saves, leveling up, currency conversion, exhaustion, resting, what the different ability checks are, like what comes under a wisdom check, what comes under an intelligence check, and how advantage and disadvantage works. And then the final page, which is one of my favorites, is the conditions, and they're alphabetized. They're not alphabetized on the DM screen.
What?
And then not only are they not alphabetized on the DM screen, but they have really cool art, but all this artwork surrounding them. Very distracting and confusing when you're trying to find that information in a hurry.
So here's the thing. So I don't know if you know this about me, Sean, but I do have an education degree in instructional design, and a lot of it is focused on cognitive behaviors and how people like process information. And what you just described with art everywhere is what I like to call seductive details that really doesn't support the information at all, like a diagram of something or pointing out stuff, but is more there for aesthetic. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really serve a purpose other than being aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's mashed together with instruction in a way that is disjointed or distracting, you are effectively putting aesthetic above instruction, which in a game like D&D can be detrimental. Going back to you saying getting frustrated, being anxious about doing things right, not wanting to cause a holdup or a hang up at the table because of social anxiety. So it's important to understand when elements are getting in the way of instruction.
Exactly that. And like, I've added a little bit more art to the new version of this, but I've been very careful not to sacrifice that. Like, the only thing we've done really is here where the leveling up table is. Instead of going to level 20, it goes to level 10 now.
Okay.
Because if you're at level 20, you probably aren't using XP now. You're probably just doing milestones, or you've specifically created a high level character for a high level campaign. So I've halved that, and we've moved the leveling table downwards and filled that empty space with a little scroll. And the scroll says, may the dice be ever in your favor. And
yeah,
a big part of the reasoning behind that is because since I've made this screen, I've been using this thing, and we included it in the Kickstarter, so we decided we wanted to make some space for it to be a part of the design without interfering with the information, which is a tiny little screen-mounted dice tower.
It's so cute!
Isn't it?
And it fits perfectly on the top of the screen. Yeah,
yeah,
I love
and
it.
It covers the first half of the leveling table on the old version, but on the new version, that leveling table fits...
Oh, yes, it fits perfectly there. I love it. That's a good addition. I like it a lot. It's fun. I think that was the trouble I had with D&D 3.5 with my character sheet, is because once I got past level 10 and I was playing a spellcaster, which is its own beast, I had to make a custom character sheet to help me remember like my spell DCs and my spell book and all that stuff. And that's something you can't really make generic across the board. It's too unique, unfortunately. Because I was going to say, you need to make a spellcaster one. And then I went, no, yeah, you really can't. I mean, you could.
What I have planned eventually, because it's going to be a big job, are clip-on additional panels.
Oh.
For class and race. So if you're playing a goblin or an half-orc, you'll have a panel that has basic orcish abilities and, you know, skills and stuff like that. All of the ones that are there that don't change depending on your level. And then the same thing for wizard. Anything that through level 1 to 3 that is always relevant to a wizard will go on there. So, you know, your spellcasting modifier is intelligence. You need to choose your spells every day. You can copy spells into your spellbook, etc., etc., etc. That sort of stuff will be on that panel. So it won't have subclass specific stuff, and it won't have high level specific stuff, but it will have that stuff that is always relevant to the class. You know, like you can rage this many times per day, and then in brackets, this may change at higher levels.
I will say this, that would have been so helpful to me starting out playing D&D, and I wish I had it. I had to struggle so hard being a spellcaster and just even like doing combat stuff. Like, it was such a struggle. And I just remember feeling, again, quote unquote, I felt like an idiot so many times. And that really isn't what you should feel like when you're playing a game trying to have fun.
Exactly.
So,
and that's exactly why I decided to make these. And, you know, like, I could have very well just left it last year. But I said, no, I'm still getting people asking me about these and people are telling me how much it's helped them and how important it was to them. So I'm like, right, well, no, we're going to do a Kickstarter and make another batch. And I'm just going to keep doing that every time we run out. Unless, of course, you know, this time around, it manages to be self-sustainable. Like, we sell enough that the savings accrue that I can just send a new order off to the printer when it's ready.
I have a question about development.
Sure thing.
So when you were developing this, how often, like, what did it start out with? Did you already have it pretty much an idea bracketed out from like your what you were using for yourself, or like what was the evolution to where you're at now in your version 2?
Look, honestly, from my first draft to the finished version 1, it didn't change that much. There were a few, it was mostly fine-tuning. I did the first draft, and then in total, honestly, it was 3 months of development. From first draft to finished product, and that included artwork. It was like a miracle of ADHD hyperfocus. It was the first project I'd been able to do where I, 75% of the time, that was the only project I was working on.
Whoa.
Because I had and still have like 15 other projects that were in development at the same time. But I wanted to get this thing done ASAP so I could get it made. So I just really dove in as hard as I could and just worked on it. So in that 3 months, it didn't change that much. I did a draft out, you know, conditions on this page. Slapped a few ideas of what kind of important information I think I should have in the first page, and the on your turn page was always going to be descriptors of those actions you could take. And then just this sort of extraneous things around that page, like maybe include dark vision. Oh yeah, we should remind people that, you know, really you can just, it's a game. It's a make-believe game. You can try whatever the hell you want. Let's remind them about that. And then my partner Robin had the idea, because they have ASD and are seeking diagnosis for ADHD at the moment. And so they have trouble with the dice and remembering what dice are what, just with the object recognition and stuff. And so they're like, oh, what about a diagram? Yes, that's perfect. I did a draft of a panel with the diagram and showed that to the internet. And everyone was like, oh my God, I didn't know I needed that. But yeah, please put that in there. That's going to help me so much. And so that was probably the biggest change, was adding that diagram. And then, yeah, the rest was, like, just fine-tuning, like, oh, yeah, I've got these bits of information. Oh, this bit's not that important. Let's throw that out and swap it out for this. And but more or less, it was 75 to 80% the same content at the end as the first draft, just fine-tuned, worded better, making the fonts the best that they could be, choosing a font with no serifs and stuff like that for the dyslexic community. I would have loved to have gone with something like Open Dyslexic, but it actually made it really hard to fit everything because of the shapes. And so I just tried to go with a nice bold font with no serifs, really simple and clean to make it as easy to read as possible. And I am actually going to be putting out a PDF version in just high contrast black and white on the inside and then the color art on the outside very soon. And I'm going to be looking at doing Open Dyslexic for that. It's just going to be a longer... I'm going to put out the first version with the current font and then start spending some time doing an Open Dyslexic version because layout on that is going to take a bit of time.
Yeah, that was my next question, is because I know some people in my life personally who have vision issues where they have to actually print on colored paper, like a rose colored paper and yellow or something different. And I was wondering if you were going to have like a high contrast black and white easy to print version that they could then...
Yeah, that is going to be coming out with the Kickstarter version. Once I finish doing the final file outlay to send off to the printer, then I'm going to make a black and white internal PDF. It'll still have the Mimic art in full color on the outside, but the inside will be the high contrast black and white. And that's, I've made that like, so it's really easy to assemble. You just print out the three pieces, and then there's a fourth page that has some little octagonal sort of long stretched out hinges. And you just fold those in half, glue them together, and then glue one half into this panel, one half into this panel, and then same, and then you've got the connectors that are the hinge.
I'm going to have you back on to talk about paper minis and comics and stuff, because I can tell just like from that experience that you've had, like to be able to construct this thing and think about how people are going to print it out is also super helpful.
Wait until you find out about Squirrel Wars.
What? Squirrel Wars?
Yeah, it's in here somewhere. It's my board game that's in development. I haven't been able to work on it for a while because I've been like really going hard on this TTRPG stuff and working on getting myself into social media marketing and stuff like that since 2020 happened. But I took that with me with the player screens to PAX in 2019 and got my final round of playtesting done as part of the indie tabletop showcase at PAX Oz that year. And I got all of the data that I needed to sit down and finish it. But that's been on hold since then because of 2020 happening. It's playable, and a lot of people were asking me, like, is this coming out on Kickstarter this year? So I was like, okay, that's a really nice compliment that you think it's ready.
Oh, gosh. I can't talk about Squirrel World. I can't even say that, Sean. Squirrel Wars. Squirrel. Squirrel Wars. There we go. I also have problems with things like Cracker Barrel, which is if there's too many R's in there, it starts to get into some weird funky territory. But going back to the everything, I just want to get on my soapbox real quick about the player screen, where it's basically as a person who is neurodivergent, is an instructional design, and really loves accessibility, and that I'm seeing so many more people. It's so important as a content creator, if you're going to be making a game, to go ahead and design for that group of people, because when you do that, you're just making good design choices in general for even a neurotypical brain. Because a neurotypical brain still can't process so much, because we all have human brains, and they're not exactly supercomputers, so... I am just so excited that you made this, and I want one, and so I will go buy one after this interview. I'm so excited. So that's my soapbox. That's my thing. I want to see more of this. I'm so happy that you made this.
Well, the good thing is that we unlocked the first stretch goal as well, which means that I'll be making a Pathfinder 2E version.
Ooh!
So that's going to be a PDF for now. That's what we unlocked. But next year's Kickstarter will be for the print version of that.
Oh, I want you to keep making them for every game.
Yeah, that's going to be a good thing, because if we do that and we hit the stretch goal for that one, that means I'll do Starfinder. And that's sort of the plan, is the stretch goal is going to be a PDF of whatever the next system is for each Kickstarter. We'll do a print Kickstarter, first stretch goal is a PDF of the next system. And then the next Kickstarter will be that PDF as a print run, and then a PDF of whatever the next one will be after that.
If you want any consultation for maybe a version that is Zwahinder, let me know, because I have tons of notes for Zwahinder that you can look at.
Yeah, that one is sort of on the list. I've got to do it, like, actually sit down and put together a big list of all the systems that people want me to do. Unfortunately for people that are already probably sitting there drumming their fingers hoping for it, I'm not going to be doing Call of Cthulhu anytime soon. Because I'm big anti-crypto, anti-NFTs. And Chaosium just started doing NFTs, so I can't really get behind that.
Sure. Makes sense. Well, Sean, if you would, please, let people know, like, where can they find, one, your stuff in general, and then also specifically the player screen.
Cool. Well, yeah, right now, the player screen is in pre-order mode because we just finished the Kickstarter on Monday. So if you want to pre-order your player screen, you can no longer get the Glowcraft add-ons, unfortunately. They were Kickstarter exclusive. So head on over to either the player screen 2.0 on Kickstarter, and you'll see a pre-order link, or go straight to Brain Beast Studios on Etsy. And if you just look up Brain Beast Studios on whatever social platform, you'll find me. I'm Brain Beast Sean on Twitter, Brain Beast Studios on Instagram, Brain Beast Studios on Facebook. And if you follow the links in my bios and whatnot, you can join the Discords. I actually run a Discord specifically for TTRPG creators in Australia. So for all of us who make art, live streams, you know, accessories, the laser cut stuff that Glowcraft makes, if you design whole systems, you sell, you have a TTRPG board game store, and you're based in Australia, get in that Discord. It is a place for us to collaborate and network and then go out into the world and show what Australia can do, because there's so much talent here, but it's so hard to actually get it seen, because the biggest scenes are the USA and the UK. So the only way Australia is going to get on the radar is if we all collaborate and clamor and make some noise together. So I created that space for that reason. I also created one for Australian illustrators for the same reason, because Australian comics is like this big. And the talent here is phenomenal, but it's just spread out all over the country.
Sure. Yeah. Okay, cool. Thank you so much, Sean, for coming on and chatting with me. This has been really fun. Yes,
thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Oh, what's this? It's not a stock outro. It's a live outro, and it's me. It's Amber. You better listen to the whole thing. Maybe there's something new. Who can know? Anyway, thank you so much for listening to the show. If you've been enjoying listening to Tabletop Babble and Tabletop Crowd, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. If I see one, I will read it out loud at the end of the show, because I'm going to start doing these live outros from now on. I really would like to get some feedback, because I'm a content creator making content, and I would love to engage with y'all more. Other places you could engage with us is on our Twitter, at Tabletop Babble. Please go follow us there, and if you have suggestions for topics or people you'd like to hear from, I'm more than happy to reach out to people, and people can reach out to us too if you want to email us at tabletopbabble@gmail.com. I will do my darndest to make sure I reply. It's just a little old me filling the email, so please be patient. And of course, you can follow me on Twitter at RocketOrca, where you can see all the little goblins I'm drawing right now. And then for my other co-hosts, you can follow Kenny at Volfmir, and then also Kristen at Kristen is no Jedi. And I would just like to thank Kristen right now so much for helping us out with Tabletop Crowd and to let you guys all know that the next few episodes are going to be tabletop crowds. There's a lot of cool Kickstarters coming out with lots of cool new games that are really interesting and really cool. So prepare for that. And I guess I also should say, Tabletop Babble is a part of the Geekspective Network. Go to geekspective.com to check out all of our cool shows. And you know what? Thank you, Dave, at Steady Minotaur, for all your editing help. This was a long outro, and maybe they won't always be like this, but maybe they will. Who knows? Anyway, catch you next week.